www.artinyourear.com.
And you are listening to Art in Your Ear on WMNF Tampa. WMNF, best little station in the nation, 88.5 FM. My name is Joellen Schulke. I am the hostess who loves you absolutely the most. This show is called Art in Your Ear. And today we are going to be talking about love. Love! So let's give a little love. This is Gizmo Variales. You know that support for WMNF comes from you, our wonderful listeners. And Rhyming with Miss Ida, specializing in children's rhyming books such as Poor Old Goat, Sad Little Dog, and more. Details on Miss Ida's children's books are at rhymingwithmissida.com. The Volunteer Committee and the governing body of WMNF, the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation, are seeking applicants to our Board of Directors. You can read what the board's responsibilities are and find the application on our website at WMNF.org in the About section. We are interested in candidates that reflect the diversity of our community. The deadline to apply is Friday, January 28th at 5 p.m. Thank you. Hope to hear from you. And we do hope from here for you. We are looking definitely for a board member. Please get in touch with us. You can go on WMF.org into the About section. It's right in there. It is something that matters very deeply to us. If you've ever thought about getting involved with a station that you love, right now is the time to apply to become a board member. Thank you so much. All right, coming up in just a few minutes. So excited. Romeo and Juliet, love story of the times that gets adapted over and over and over to sort of speak to the times that we are in. We're going to be hearing from David Warner, David Jenkins, and Darius Autry about that. I'm going to let you know other things going on about town, and I've got some great music for you in the background. That was Polyniso. Going on. And so we've got a cover. I was thinking the Romeo and Juliet has kind of an 80s vibe to it. So I thought, oh, so much music to play. And then just this morning, this next song came into my inbox and it just seemed like the perfect mix for this show. So stay tuned. This is Amethyst Kla. Amethyst Kla. Love will tear us apart. And that was, whoops, I can't hear myself. There we go. And again, that was at Amethyst Kla with Love Will Tear Us Apart. But super excited in the studio. I always have this question as to which line are people on? Well, everyone say hello. David Jenkins, I'm going to start with you.
Hi.
Why are you here?
Why am I here? I'm the director of Romeo and Juliet at Jackson Theater.
And you also, I think, and I really want to talk about this, you also, for the wonderful Shakespeare shows, don't you adapt most of the scripts?
Yeah, I usually do the adaptation.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a big deal, too.
Yeah.
And then, Darius, would you say hello to the people?
Hello, everyone. I am Darius, and I am playing Romeo.
And on the phone line?
Yes, hi. David Warner, I'm playing the nurse and the Prince Aeschylus.
Which one do you like better, nurse or Prince Aeschylus?
Oh, my God. they're very different people, let's just put it that way.
Well, the nurse is really, I mean, after Romeo and Juliet, isn't the nurse the sort of next kind of, I don't know, I want to say biggest character, but she's sort of she instigates a lot, or she kind of makes a lot happen.
Plot,
right,
sure.
Yeah. In here. Let me see your face. There you go. Well, we're here because Romeo and Juliet is Job Site Theater's Shakespeare for 2022. And if anybody has been interested in theater in this area, Job Site's Shakespeare is always kind of one of the most exciting shows of the year because we never know what's going to come out of David and his crew's minds and stuff like that. Will you talk a little bit about what you were thinking? Like, how come this is the year for Romeo and Juliet?
Well, you know, the whole plague thing, plague of both your houses, right?
Right.
Was actually written during the plague.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, like, you know, we're in a climate right now, not that we haven't been a different way for a while, but, you know, looking at the world and how divided we tend to be about literally everything. Mm-hmm. And also at a point where we're really trying to welcome people back to the theater and get people to come back. So we thought that Romeo and Juliet, you know, checked all those boxes.
It seems that, you know, once I knew that you were coming on, I went back and read the play again. And there's so many, not just the big picture of the animosity between the houses, but there's so many little moments in it, like this kind, you know, reading it in that way, there's all these little details and little asides and cross relationships. I was reading an article that you did, Dave, and you were talking about how, you know, if sort of in a way honoring what Shakespeare's original intention was, by he didn't set plays. Some, of course, but most of his plays aren't set in other times. You know, they're in his modern time. They're addressing a modern crowd. And that there was men in their plays played all the roles. So in this interview, you talked about, and you've talked about this before, that just because a role is generally considered something on paper doesn't mean it has to be that way on stage. Hence, we have David Warner as Nurse.
Right, because the playwright's super dead, and right, I'm not going to get sued by anybody. Nobody's now. You sign contracts literally saying you're not going to change a single thing about a single thing, and
that
you
would
know,
be so frustrating.
Right, and so I'm like, the guy's dead, and let's have fun with it.
Right, yeah. So, Darius, will you talk a little bit? We mentioned real quickly before getting started that you had played Romeo once before. Mm-hmm. Is there, and that was probably just a handful of years ago.
Yeah, about 3 years ago.
So, is there was there something that you had to figure out with your Romeo, your 22 Romeo, and then the Romeo that you played in the past? Are they different Romeos?
Yes, they were. When I did it in college, it was extremely modernized to the point to where it was in the present day. And what we're doing with Jobsite, it's set in the 80s. So that was one change. And two, the script was slightly different. So I had to almost forget some lines that I was habitually saying so that I can say the right lines that, you know, David put together in the script or the way he cut it. So in a sense, a lot of it was the same, but there were some habitual things that stayed with me that I had, it took some time to drop.
When you talk about that, was it, you know, I mean, everybody grows and changes mm-hmm. and has life experience, which I'm sure affects, I'm not an actor, so, but I'm sure it affects what you're doing and how you perceive things, but also a director comes with their vision, and so you sort of move over into that vision. Mm-hmm. Do you understand Romeo differently from how you, even a year ago, how you looked at him?
Definitely. And this is something David and I talked about. It's just the maturity of the character. When I played Romeo in college opposed to now, I played them around the same age. I see them as a late teen. But the thing is, I've learned a lot in the past couple years in my life. And I just think that kind of trickles into my perception of Romeo and his journey and his beginning, middle, end, and kind of what he learns and how he goes about his relationships. I just think there's more of a maturity to the character than what I originally thought.
Is there, because one, I remember when we were young, of course, when I was in school, we did Romeo and Juliet and did, mm-hmm. did all those things, and my parents were just absolutely devoted to West Side Story. I've been thinking a lot how there was all these different versions of Romeo and Juliet for all these different generations. But there's sort of there was an idea, the Franco Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet sort of showed them as these young people that had a lot of impulsive behaviors. Yet the Romeo and Juliet that I sort of feel is just fits with what you're saying. It's like, I don't want to act like they don't know what they're doing. I feel like they do know what they're doing. And I like you. You're both nodding, so I want you to address that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a cop-out. It really is a cop-out to just make them like silly kids. It's not there in the language. I mean, you know, Shakespeare is very intentional in how he writes a person's level of education, emotional state, all these things. And the text just simply does not support the choice that these people are naive. Mm-hmm. Impulsive, obviously. This all happens in the span of 3 days. But I feel like I didn't want to cut the heart out of these characters. And I didn't want to cut the heart out of the story. I'm not, it's irrelevant to me whether or not this is true love or eternal love or anything like that, because we don't get to find out. right? And that's part of the tragedy.
It's what they feel. It's like what, right. you know, what Romeo is feeling right. is what Romeo is feeling.
What
not,
these two people are feeling.
Not philosophical
this,
about it.
Right, mm-hmm. right. This is for real for them in this moment. And it's not my job as a director, as a storyteller, to put a judgment on that. Mm-hmm. To me, the more interesting thing really is kind of looking at the world that bore these people and the consequences of this world, you know, that's what interests me.
It's such a, you know, it's one of Shakespeare's tragedies, but it doesn't sort of start getting tragic until you're already all in. You've bought in. You're like, these guys, I love them. You know, and so here again, how as knowing with every single love scene, and I feel like I'm not giving away the plot here if I talk about this on the air, but every single love scene, every single action in the back of your head, you're like, gonna be dead.
Yeah.
Talk about framing, and this is for both of you, talk about framing this love story within everyone knows the ending and how that, you know, whether it's against your own expectations or audience expectations, Romeo and Juliet is a pretty famous ending. How do you guys, you know, how do you do a play with that and how does it affect you?
David on the line is really a critical part of that because the way, and again, you know, I look at what is on the paper and what's supported, and to me, the role of the nurse is super interesting because, you know, keep in mind, originally at the time, it was a man in a dress, mm-hmm. right? And there are fat jokes and there's, you know, this joke and old jokes and doddering jokes.
Right.
Yeah. Like all of these jokes at the nurse's expense, you know, we're laughing at this human. And then it gets to this point where it is no longer funny. And all of a sudden you've got the father screaming in the nurse's face and Juliet is heartbroken. And then when Juliet takes the poison, the nurse thinks she helped kill this kid. And
who's practically,
I mean, it's practically
her daughter, right? Yeah.
Right?
David,
and
jump in anytime.
so David, yeah, I mean, this was a conversation we had about why I wanted him to do the part, because it had to be somebody who could make you do both, who could make you laugh and then all of a sudden twist the knife.
I one of the things I really appreciated in thinking about the play and David's approach to it is how much he emphasized the love that drove this character. Hate as well drives much of the action, but love is key. And through all the comedy, and especially as in the tragedy, as David says, I feel very deeply that the nurse feels completely responsible and guilty for this girl's. What she perceives to be the death toward the end, and what drives that is that she loves Juliet. She's thrilled in a way to be invited into the conversation about who Juliet's going to marry when Juliet's mother introduces the idea of the noble Paris. I think that's just cool. Oh, and she's asking my advice, and then I get involved in this, you know, plot where I allow her to have an assignation with Romeo, even though Romeo just killed my best friend. I mean, I'm a complicated gal. and I think it's very interesting to sort of play that arc. And I'm, you know, double cast as the man who gets to say the big words at the end, which is as much of a kind of a burden as anything else.
That's true. Well, when you all were doing this, so it's set sort of generally in the 80s, and not specifically, like it's, you look at it and their shoulder pads are out to,
we were very careful
stuff,
to not do that.
But to sort of get a general feeling that it's not now, there's not cell phones in it,
right.
I would imagine, not internet and stuff like that. And so it has that sort of thing. But there was also this idea, so it was you cut down the time length of mm-hmm. it, because realistically, 4 hours, 3.5 hours is a long time to sit in a theater these days with a mask on your face, you know. But was there something else about it that you wanted to, or both of you, Darius and David as actors, David, you as adapting it and directing it, was there something besides the love story and this sort of ongoing, you know, these two families with this long history of hatred against each other. You know, like, how did you want the audience to walk away with that? As Romeo, how do you want people to think about that? I mean, because that's invariably it's sad, but that's mm-hmm. just such a big part of it. So I want, if you would talk about that part.
Yeah, I think when you have a division of two groups in general, the people that get stuck in the middle can suffer the most. And I think this is just a story of simply that. And when you divide, when you're so focused on the beef and the friction and the differences, the people in the middle, usually the younger generation, suffers. And I think that's very relevant to today.
You know, I think, and it's just, I'll never forget it, but just 3 blocks from my house, a little girl was killed because 2 gangs were shooting at each other and yep. the bullet hit her bedroom. And it was just a little 6-year-old girl. And that, you know, and it was this long-standing beef. And this happened when I was a reporter years ago, and I covered the trial, and they were sort of like, what were you beefing about? And they were like, well, it wasn't my beef, it was their beef, but that, these are my people, so yeah. what
right,
do I do?
Right, and you know, I'll just pull one example out, and you know, when somebody talks about something like January 6th, then I'm like, look, people died. Like, we're not talking, like, you know, it gets so stuck on...
It's
your
a,
side,
right.
right? And I'm, as a human, one of the reasons why I even looked at Romeo and Juliet, this is probably not going to be a popular opinion with a lot of people. I'm kind of tired of everybody's sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I find myself as a human really looking for the ways, like, look, how can we bring people together? How can we learn how to better cooperate?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are, and that's not to say that there are not just grievances and that there are not things that I expect people to put a hand out for, right? Like, I mean, we're not, you can always find the extreme of, well, I'm just not going to accept that. And I'm not talking about that. Like, you know, theater brings people together literally
mm-hmm.
into a room.
Right.
And we don't know the person's politics sitting next to us, and we don't need to,
and
you
I,
know, and we're witness to a story. And this idea of consequences, right? Collateral damage. That's what matters, and that's what makes this tragic. The tragedy mm-hmm. is not that these two people are young and dumb, right? That's where sometimes people plant the tragedy. Oh, they're young and dumb, and they got into this thing. And the tragedy comes from the world they inhabit made them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The world,
and killed them.
Right. Because the world drove them to a priest who probably didn't make some of the best decisions, even though he did them out of love.
Right.
And the nurse makes some kind of bad decisions, but does them from a place of love.
And that's a really interesting part. Is that something that you do put forward? And I apologize, I wasn't able to go see a preview, that actions made out of love and actions made out of a kind regard are as damaging mm-hmm. as actions made out of the anger and hatred. Because that whole society is just sick. It's a sick society that they're living
right.
in. So, well, we're talking about Romeo and Juliet, one of the great tragic stories of our all ages. It opens up at Jobsite Theater tonight, officially, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So thank you so much. I know it's a big day, so thanks for coming in for that. I want to sort of go a little bit broader and talk about the, it's so interesting because you have a nice big cast. You've brought in a lot of the people. You have 2 different people with fighting things and stuff like that. Certainly one of the most exciting the exciting moments on stage at any point in time is that big fight near the beginning with Mercutio and, you know, all those different guys. So I want to talk a little bit about how as, how, and David, please do jump in here because you're an important part. You sort of keep things going whenever anything calms down, then the nurse sort of pops in like, I'm going to make sure this moves forward and we're not like just languishing here. Mm-hmm. But how do you guys work on the pacing? How do you sort of understand like, how it works, like we go fast here, we linger there. Will you just talk a little, because I've seen so many different ways that this is done. So I'm interested in hearing how, as a director and adapter and as actors, you make those decisions on
I'd be
speed.
Curious what David or Darius think. Because...
Well, pacing has certainly been emphasized. And
what?
and I think you'll find that this production moves remarkably fast. I know that I have, in addition to the nurse powering along the various dilemmas, the prince comes in and sort of shuts things down at several points.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you have to time very, very carefully so that it the action can continue and then it comes to a halt. And it's tricky to do that. I wanted to add one more thing about the prince, and maybe I'm sorry if this is off the subject for pacing, but it goes back to what you were saying, Joellen, about that incident in your neighborhood and what the gang's reactions were. What the prince says seems to me to be so cogent now. He says this feud, he's talking to Capulet and Montague, was bred of an airy word. You know, it's led to brawls. And you probably, just like this gang member, like Tybalt later, who seems to hate for no other reason than to hate, they've forgotten the reason. They've forgotten the reason that they hate each other. It's just embedded now into the culture. And
right.
And I think that as I think, David, you were saying, that's very true now. A lot of airy words have been bred out there and feeding this kind of rage between.
Yeah, and I love that the person in power also uses the phrase "and me for winking at your discord."
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right. Like I've
right.
He's just as complicit, and he admits
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Yeah,
it is such a juicy play. Was there a struggle in sort of cutting some of it out since you had to? I mean,
yes.
Talk about kill your darlings.
There were goodness.
Uh-oh.
What happened to your dump button?
I don't see a dump button. It's over here. I know.
Oh, God.
I know.
I'm used to having my own dump button.
I know. Sorry.
Yeah, there were things that I really didn't want to cut, and there were things that I added in, to be honest. This is maybe some of the most playwriting I've done in terms of taking lines away from other people and giving them to other people. Like, there's a line I gave Romeo in a scene that was actually Benvolio's line, and I completely restructured a whole scene that now involves the nurse that had nothing to do with the nurse, and like. But again, can I remind you, the guy's dead, so
right,
nobody
yeah.
cares.
And also, I mean, if you want to make it tighter and still make
yeah.
sense and still
you have
speak
to. Right.
to people,
and Shakespeare repeated himself a lot for reasons because of the way the day would unfold, and you'd have got five acts, and so he'd remind you kind of in every act of what was going on, and we're doing it all in a truncated period of time, and so
right.
we don't.
I mean, people go get a
it.
Mutton.
Right.
leg or whatever
right.
they're
we
eating.
Don't we don't need to repeat that information. Is it moving the story? Is it advancing it? Like so but that still doesn't mean, I mean, there were actors who came to me during the process and were like, hey, look, I'd really like this line back because it's good. And I generally speaking, I gave it back.
Right.
Or I would find that, you know what, I really like this passage, but it's not translating the stage and it's just dragging it down. You know what, can we cut this? Like,
mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
And so you play this back and forth because ultimately it's about what plays on stage, mm-hmm. you know.
That's fantastic. So that was David Jenkins. He adapted and is directing Romeo and Juliet for Job Site Theater. On the line with us is David Warner, who is the nurse and the prince, and then Darius Autry, who is doing Romeo. Darius, can I put you on the spot? Can you
yeah.
give us a little taste of what your Romeo sounds like?
Yes, of course. How about I do the monologue where I find Juliet when right after the party scene?
Ooh, do it.
Does that
yeah,
work?
That
okay.
sounds wonderful.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief that thou, her maid, art far more fair than she. Be not her maid, since she is envious. Her vestal livery is but sick and green, and none but fools do wear it. Cast it off. It is my lady. Oh, it is my love. All that she knew she were. There you go.
So does Romeo kind of, does he like this kind of poetic part of himself? Does he like, has he been in love before? Has he done this before? Is this new to him?
No. And that's a conversation David and I had in our first meeting. Is this the first time Romeo's falling in love, or is Romeo playing love? And David said, you know, anytime it's the first time you do something on stage, it's not mundane at all. That plays more interesting. And that was something very different for me, opposed to the first time I did Romeo,
mm-hmm.
was at the front of my head when breaking down this character and doing the work. And I think it just naturally led to a lot of discoveries within the character
right.
and throughout the process.
And again, I go back to the text mm-hmm. also, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the minute after he sees her, he says, did my heart love till now?
Like, right.
You know, like, okay, this is new. This
right.
is different.
Like, maybe
you know?
I
right.
hooked up, but whoa.
Yeah, this is real, you know?
You know, you're doing this, or I don't know if you've done it yet, but you're going to be doing this in front of school groups also,
yeah.
Right?
We started. Our very first performance was in front of 175 middle and high school students.
Yes.
So this one, for some people, might be the first time they go to theater outside of whatever's in their classroom or something, or, you know, Zoom or something like that. Is there, how was it to, like, be representing yeah. themselves to themselves, like that first love to themselves, who they may not have even have felt that love yet?
Yeah, it was a great experience, to be honest, and we didn't know what to expect. It was our very first preview. There was a lot of kids in there, and 175 to be exact.
That's a lot of energy in the room.
Yes.
This is at the Schimberg?
Or in the Jabe.
In the Jabe. Okay, yeah. So lots of big room,
yes.
Lots of space.
Yes, and they received it well, and that was very, very happy on our end,
right.
to see and to feel, because, you know, Shakespeare's language is very, not very, but much so opposite to what they usually hear every day. And for them to be following along on the journey and kind of just feel what we're feeling, and it meant a lot to us.
Do you think they knew the story?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There was, but I wonder, like, to read something and then to see it and then fall in love. I mean, I'm sure they're, like, falling in love with Romeo and Juliet, and then they see the betrayals that happen and everything. What was the end like? Were they... I'm going to be crying when I go see it.
Right. So I was told that all the students had read it before they came. And there was this moment, like, when, a spoiler alert, Mercutio dies. Mm-hmm. Again, if you don't know the story, I'm super sorry.
Right, yeah. But, it's a little late. You've had 40-something years.
I mean, like, the way the audience gasped. I mean, there were like, no. Mm-hmm. And that was something, actually, that might have been because of the way Dan Granke choreographed the fights. You know, they said, like, look, we all know that Mercutio and Tybalt are going to die, so I think the interesting thing is making it a surprise how.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it could have been that what elicited all the gasps and stuff like that,
right.
And the
Ooh.
Shock, right? And that was kind of cool.
And
this is exactly why we do this program, and it's why it means so much to us, because these plays weren't meant to be read. No offense to any English teachers out there. They were never meant to be read. They're meant to be witnessed, and so...
You know, I went to a Jesuit Catholic school for most of my school up until my last year of high school, and we had to read all our Shakespeare out loud, and that was it. Mm. Like, you just had to read it out loud, and sometimes in groups, but we never, you know, our teachers were never like, just read this. They like, speak this. Stuff
yes.
like that. So what you're saying resonates so much. Can people, we have a lot of teachers that
yeah.
listen, if they're not in class, can people still sign up?
Absolutely.
For the school stuff?
We've got performances next week and the week after. There's information on our website.
Mm-hmm.
We offer in-class outreaches. We'll go to your school before you come, and we'll go back to your school after you come.
That's amazing.
To provide additional outreach. Like, we can go ahead of time and, like, contextualize what they're going to see and explain,
right.
like, what to look out for, or come back afterwards and talk about their experience and do stuff like that. And that's at no additional cost
right,
to the
yeah.
students.
That's a pretty amazing program.
We also have free tickets available for students in need,
right.
schools that might not have any dough.
So they can just go to your website
and
find the way to do that.
Find the way to do all that.
You know, that's wonderful, and I think that's a big part of it. You know, there's a lot of kids that you hear them talk about, and actors who are actors and directors and writers and people that are involved in theater and film. And it was literally this sort of school play, and I was just, I can't remember who the actress is now, but she's starring in something new, and she said, I didn't know the Swan at 14. We went to see whatever play it was, and I was like, oh, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Right.
Julia Garner, that's who it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life, and it was going, just doing exactly what people are doing to your show, like going to
yeah.
your show
yeah.
And
that's
change
why
your
I'm
lives.
Here,
right.
You know? Like, I didn't grow up going to theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And to bounce off that, when I read Romeo and Juliet when I was a junior in high school, I was not into the live arts at that point. I didn't start theater until college, till after I originally read Romeo and Juliet. But I didn't feel the weight of the character and just the story until I spoke the language in college. And then coming back around to the script for the second time, it almost has that that double Mike Tyson punch to me. It just hits me kind of twice as much. And my point is that when you speak the language or you hear the language off the paper, that's when it really resonates with you differently.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I love hearing that. I really do love hearing that. We're starting to run out of time. I have so many questions to ask. I want to bring David back into the conversation again because I want to talk a little bit. David, you've directed turn your radio down. You've directed as well as acted and stuff like that. So when you have a character like this, you're working with a director who knows his Shakespeare and stuff like that. But were there things that changed the way you approach a role as an actor? With a directing background?
You know, I think every actor who's also been a director knows that you got to trust the director. I mean, that's got to be the bottom line, and that your interpretation of the staging or whatever that is, that's kind of irrelevant because he has the reins.
Mm-hmm.
And I really trust David. I've never been in a show at job site before. And as I've told David, I've told Giles Davies, our Shakespeare expert, and Nicole Smith, our stage manager.
Giles is the secret weapon.
Yeah, Giles is an absolute treasure. And the care and the intelligence and the trust they placed in us was palpable every step of the way. And one emphasis that's particularly Giles but also David were putting on all the time was that the language is going to do it for you, that you can that Shakespeare didn't have many directions because the actors were going to be, it was all there in the language. And I one of the compliments I heard from friends of mine who were at the preview last night was that it seemed as if everybody knew what they were saying. Not like obvious, but not always the case. Yeah.
That is true.
That is true. Well, wait.
Definitely coming from the direction.
And with the nurse, I mean, it seems to me, so when I was reading this again, and I was reading the nurse, you know, focusing on, of course, the nurse and Romeo, since mm-hmm. you all were coming on, the nurse has these, sometimes, I know her motivation is love, but I'm wondering what other motivations the nurse has, because it seems sometimes like she does something and I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, I think it's a class issue too. I mean, she is a servant in that household, and that she actually gets to play a role in making events happen is puffs her up a little.
Right, so there's a little ego going on.
Yes, there's some ego going on, and it occurs to me as when for instance the Lord Capulet is screaming at my charge that if he banishes her, I don't have a job anymore. So there are other things that are driving her besides the love of Juliet. It is that good place to work.
Right. Workplace romances really screw everything up. We're almost out of time, and I don't want to belabor this, but going back to the idea, and then I'll see if there's anything else. Going back to the idea of how this is almost two plays in one, and you have this like frivolity and fun and comedy, and I mean it has fights, so there's action, but you know, you have this first half of the show and the second half of the show are pretty different. And as actors and as a director and stuff like that, are there sort of crossover things from first act and second act to like anchor it for people, or you know, is it just, it's a kind of a free fall of emotions, like, nope, we're going to take you on this roller coaster ride, strap in.
Yeah. The first half of the play is a comedy, and then it quickly turns into a tragedy. And coming from the perspective of Romeo, spoiler alert, when Romeo's banished, it's not really being mad about being banished from Verona. It's being mad and upset about being separated from Juliet. And it quickly turns into a tragedy because that's when it gets into all the stuff that David on the phone just previously spoke about, between the conversations with Capulet and things like that. But it quickly takes a right turn in the tragedy.
I would say, wait, let me interrupt you. I'm going to say that it always frustrated me that no one understands how desperate people will act. Like, not no one, but the parents don't understand when someone is desperate what they will do, and that they manufactured this desperate situation. And I'm sort of like, you idiots, you could have done anything else. But of course, for the play, you need them to do that. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and go ahead, David.
Well, yeah, I was thinking I there's points where I wish I could have said to Lord Capulet, she's already married. They love each other, and he's in a double family.
It's great. He's got money. What are you whining about?
But, you know, I can't say that because I'm in the subservient position.
Right, and you would have gotten killed.
Maybe so.
You know, one of the things I was going to say is like the through line, you know, Jeremy's got this great score where he's done some really neat stuff with music that people are very familiar with. And then it does different stuff. And it's this, I don't want to spoil too much of that, but if you listen to just, and whether the audience picks up on it or not, it doesn't matter because it's still there. But like, you know, like there's like Eternal Flame and like these things in the first half. And then it's, you know, it literally getting into No Time to Cry, Sisters of Mercy in Act Two, right? Like it's like The Cure and Sisters of Mercy and Peter Murphy in Act Two.
Right.
And,
it just gets, you know, really
like,
dark.
Right. Like Tiffany and Duran Duran in the first half. So like there's this thing that happens with the music that even within the 80s music, it starts in one way and it ends in a completely different way.
Yeah, it's all like fun and games until it's death.
And the lighting and all those things. But
was that Joanne?
Joe Avril Snell.
Joe Avril,
and Jeremy Douglas, our composer. Another secret weapon, because that's the thing about good sound design is that often it disappears, or good lighting, the good design in general, you know, just often just fades away as it's kind of supposed to do.
Right. Its job is to make a world.
Right. And that's what we should walk away with. But,
Well, okay. So I'm way over time, but I'm asking anyway, what's up next for you? Darius.
Yeah, so I will be playing the role of Michelle in Stageworks' production of A Murder on the Orient Express.
What?
I didn't know
what?
That.
Yeah. That's fun. What is that?
So it's pretty much set on the Orient Express. It's a train. My character is the operator on the train. He is a Frenchman, so I have to work on my French accent.
Oh.
Yes.
I was listening to French pop on the way in.
Maybe that's what I should do.
And when is the Stageworks production?
Yeah, it starts in the middle of March and runs up to April 4th.
Nice, nice. Yeah. And what's coming up for job site?
Next job site show is A Clockwork Orange. It goes...
With music? Was that what I saw?
Anthony Burgess, he calls it a play with music because it's just full of Beethoven.
Okay, oh, so you're doing the play. You're not doing
It's not a musical. Movie. It is a play with music. And Anthony Burgess wrote this adaptation himself. Spoiler alert, Stanley Kubrick gets his rear end whipped at the end of the play. Literally. Burgess was mad at that movie.
But good. That sounds delightful.
Right. I am directing Little Shop of Horrors for the Strass Center.
Oh, fun. Oh, that's going to be twisted.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And when will that be?
That goes up in April.
Wonderful. David, you got anything on your plate you want to tell people about?
I'm probably going to be returning to the Radio Theater Workshop.
Good.
On Amazon, talking about a while back, and rehearsals and performances of this show got in the way of that. That's a monthly thing. And
I know. You're not going to be there Monday, I guess.
I'll be in the audience, I think.
There you go.
Yeah.
So wonderful. Well, again, we've been talking about Romeo and Juliet. It opens up at Job Site tonight. You can go online to Job Site Theater. Make sure I have the thing right. Oh, right in front of me. jobsitetheater.org/Romeo-Juliet and get all sorts of information. Thank you both so much for coming in. I'm so excited. David, thank you for calling in. I'm glad I got to see you last week. So I'm not totally deprived of you. And of course, we're going to go out with Romeo and Juliet, but this is Widow's Peak version here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5 FM.
to serenade, letting everybody low. With a love song that he made, finds a streetlight, sips out of the shades, and something like you and me, babe, how about it? Juliet says, hey, it's Romeo. Nearly gave me a heart attack. He's underneath the window, she's singing, hey, love, my boyfriend's back. She shouldn't come around here singing up at people like that. Anyway, what you gonna do about it? Juliet, the dice was loaded from the start, and I bet. And you exploded into my heart. I forget, I forget. The movie song. When you gonna realize it was just that the time was wrong?
Simplify your life. Donate that vehicle you no longer need to help us bring you more of WMNF. It's easy and free to you. Here's how to get started. Go to WMNFcar.org.
Well, that seems pretty simple to do. Just go to WMNFcar.org. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the emails and stuff from everyone. I want to say hi to Mark. Mark, so nice that you are out there. One of my favorite things that happens every single year is the Through Our Eyes show at Studio at 620. They have a reception tonight from 6 to 8. Oops, a closing reception tonight, I think from 6 to 8 p.m. Do they? Maybe I'm making that up. I thought they did. Anyway, Through Our Eyes closes tomorrow, and I suggest that people might want to check it out. It is Midtown Through Our Eyes. It's a photography project involving students from Melrose Elementary, Johns Hopkins Middle, and Lakewood High Schools. They take pictures of their communities, and it's really gorgeous. Also going on tomorrow, the Tweed Ride. It's a 10th annual Tweed Ride. It's a fundraiser for St. Pete Shuffle, and it's going to always be fun. You can go online. I've got all this shared on the Art in Your Ear Facebook page, so you can find it there and read more about it. And since we were talking about Shakespeare, coming up, Tampa Rep is going to be doing King Lear. King Lear will be from February 4th through the 20th up at USF Theater 2, and that is presented by Tampa Rep. You can go online for tamparep.org. Get more information about that. I am almost out of here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being part of this wonderful radio station.
That we have love.
There's something else I was going to tell you. I did see that Meatloaf died, but it was too late for me to get him in my playlist. I apologize for that. We do have a fundraiser coming up. WMNF has the I Love WMNF fundraiser in February, starting on February 14th. So that means we will be raising money that Friday. Would that be the 19th? And, we need your help. We did not make our goal last time, which is really bad. So please, if you listen to the show regularly, if you care about this show, think about becoming a Circle of Friends donor. That's $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever you can afford. And it means a lot to us for you to do that. And it feels pretty painless, I hope, and for your finances to do that. So you can go online to WMNF.org and then go to the Art in Your Ear page and donate through that. Please, the more donations we get in ahead of time, the less we have to beg on the air. That's also the other logic. And I hopefully we'll have some nice little thank you gifts to give you. E-Love is in the studio. She is getting ready to do her fantastic electronica, global electronica. Always this great spiritual music and body moving music and mind clearing music. So stay tuned. After that, we listen to the fantastic live music showcase. I see the crew is in here. I'm not sure who's going on, but we're going to have some live music from 2 to 3. That's followed by Reverend Billy and Marvelous Marv with Rhythm Revival. It is a reach back into the roots of rock and roll with gospel, country, early rock and roll. And then there's always just really great conversation about music and other things in that. When we get into the evening, we hear R&B, classic R&B from The Soul Party, classics of all the best ones, and then one of my favorite shows, The Soul Kitchen. It is this fantastic, just feast of all different types of black-centric music, but not only. You have some hip-hop, some R&B, some jazz, some rock. You just absolutely never know what you hear on that show. And then we end the night with Flashback Friday, which is Florida blues and Florida R&B. So stick with your community radio station. Thank you so much. If you need to get in touch, my name is Jo Ellen. It's joellen@wmnf.org. Send me what you're thinking about or what you want to know, and I'll be happy to get in touch with you. You are listening to WMNF Tampa. WMNF, the best station in the nation. Stay tuned for NPR News. We're going to go out with Spaceship Earth from Mop Mop and Anthony Joseph. Thanks for listening.
Overlooking the valley of gold. Show me this place that they call Earth. And let me land this ship. Space will be my home. Space will be my home. So long they see us coming and call us UFOs. So long they call us extraterrestrial alien life forms. Not knowing that we are death. And we come from a future when we have learned to warp the fabric of time and space. My lunar love.
take my hand. Soon we will forget where we have come from. Space will be my home.